Welcome to Executive Report. Today we are blessed to have Ray Rice join us. So obviously if you're in Baltimore, you know who Ray is, and it's an honor to have him. For everyone else out in the world that might not know who he is, I'll read a quick little bio for you. So Ray is the former NFL running back who played six seasons with the Baltimore Ravens. He played college football at Rutgers and was drafted by the Ravens in the second round of the 2008 NFL Draft. Ray was named three-time NFL Pro Bowler and is a Super Bowl champion. He's second in Baltimore Ravens franchise history in rushing yards, rushing attempts, and rushing touchdowns, and he's third in franchise history in combined touchdowns. It's really cool. So Ray became the topic of controversy among the 2014 offseason aggravated assault, but today he's been able to successfully redefine his purpose through family, community, nonprofits, and just being an all-around great person. So it's a pleasure to have you here, Ray. Welcome to Executive Report.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So I got to be honest, as someone born and raised in Baltimore and a huge Ravens fan, it's really cool for me to sit here with you. You were one of my favorite players. It's still one of my favorite people. And, you know, when I think about your story, all the way back to college, you seem to have this innate ability of redefining yourself for whatever the need and whatever the purpose is. And for a long time, I mean, you were in the public eye 100% of the time. And not only does that have to have a lot of pressure, but it's got to change the way, you know, the way you act when you go out in public, you know, just going out to a restaurant and having dinner and things like that. And it seems like that today, focusing on coaching and community and nonprofit work, without all that noise the NFL brings, it's really easy to focus on those things and be great at them. But I'm really curious from the, you know, the NFL perspective, what's it like going through the daily grind? I mean, how much stress does that put on someone?
Well, you know, they say proper preparation, you know, prevents poor performance. Yeah. I think just being fully open and honest, right? I think my preparation to play the game mm-hmm. of football was always great. The preparation for life was something that you just can't, like, I wasn't ready for.
Got it.
You know, and without making any excuses, like I said, I put everything into that grind, like, from going back to childhood. You know, I told my mother when I was 11 years old that I would make it to the NFL. And so it's easy to say, me being the oldest child, you know, I took on roles and responsibilities of, you know, of an adult, mm-hmm. you know, even to the extreme of paying bills at 11 years old. So what happens when at 11, you're a man? At 21, when you get drafted, you become a little boy again. So it's kind of like your life is kind of going in reverse.
Gotcha.
And like you said, that grind of the NFL, I mean, how could you prepare somebody for, you know, having negative, you know, a couple hundred dollars in your bank account to in January to August getting a training camp, and now you got, you know, $2 million in your bank account.
That's right.
It's a big change. So essentially, you know, you get into that season and everything just becomes business mind and work.
Yeah.
And it's like you prepared your whole life just to make it to the NFL, and then you finally have what you call an off season. Which is really not a word because you never have an off season, but the grind, it is a rigorous grind.
Yeah.
You know, I was only able to really, I wouldn't say enjoy myself, but as a rookie, you know, you're getting drafted. No one really, I kind of flew under the radar, but after your first Pro Bowl, it got to a point where, you know, you could barely go to dinners without being interrupted and things like that. And I was always a people person, so it never bothered me to the extent where I thought it would become something where it took away from my family. But there were times where, like I said, my family, my wife, I didn't know that until she realized that we were going to dinner. And until she said, you know, I'd like to just be with you.
Yeah.
You know, I understand, you know, we want to help people and do the right thing. And so it came to a point where we're going to dinner, but we couldn't be amongst everybody, so we had to find a private room and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not really a sheltered person. I really like to be amongst people. So, but respecting my wife, I had to do that. And even today, now it's that balance. Now it's like, if I'm going to dinner with my wife, all right, we got to find a babysitter for the kids.
That's true.
You know, because at the end of the day, that's not, you know, quality time if we can't spend it together and, you know, put our heads together and try to do what's best for our family.
Yeah, and you know, you hear different perspectives from different players. You know, I remember Jerry Rice doing his induction to the Hall of Fame, and he was talking about it was all business all the time. And then guys like Deion Sanders, where it was like, hey, we got to enjoy the ride. We're only going to be here for a certain amount of time. And just the different perspectives. But, you know, for those two guys, completely different philosophies, it all ended up pretty well for them. There are a lot of challenges, of course, along the way. But being under the spotlight 100% of the time isn't easy. I mean, in our preparation for today's episode, you mentioned that, you know, the public eye saw you at your best and they saw you at your worst. And you've been able to rebound personally from that. And I think that's fantastic. But the pressure of the grind, like you talked about specifically for going out to dinner and things like that, I don't think the average person can really understand it until they experience it. Do you think that's true?
I think that the more we talk about what we call average, right, I think the thing that I've always felt connected to people, right? And the thing that we call average is, all right, we're just talking about salary at that point, right?
That's true.
So for a guy whose salary is public and their faces can be seen, it's almost like, you know, can LeBron James just go out and sit at a regular dinner table? He has to literally probably block the whole restaurant just to buy a piece of happiness.
That's true.
It's like the more money you make in being a celebrity, you know, the more money you really have to spend, you know, for peace and happiness. Whereas when you talk about average, you know, I've always wanted to be amongst, you know, people. You know, I was always just that kind
just
of guy.
A people person?
Yeah. So a lot of times, like, I would just be naive, you know. Like, I remember one time I went to Towson Mall thinking it was just okay when I was playing, right? And I remember it literally getting, you know, I went to a store, and once I found out I was in the store, they had to close the store, you know, for me just to get out. And I was just with a couple of friends. You know, I'm not here with a bodyguard, security guard, and things like that. So, I mean, I just think, once you talk about getting on the level of, you know, the pressure, I just think the more money you make in the public eye and being a celebrity, the more you have to spend, you know, to have that peace and tranquility, you know, on your own. And then comes a double-edged sword if you have kids.
Yeah.
You know, how do you make it normal for them? You know, they always got to feel the pressure of being someone else's kid, you know, and I'm doing that now with my daughter, but she's actually carving her own way.
I was going to ask, how are you doing? She's
carving her own way. I mean, be honest with you, some kids, you know, they don't play football, and be honest with you, I don't run or hide from anything. So, you know, just dealing with parents, and you know, they get to see something they really don't get to see.
Yeah,
that I am a hands-on father. You know, I'm with my kids every day. You know, I enjoy reading my son books to bed. You know, I enjoy waking up, you know, going, having breakfast out there ready for them. So the things that, you know, when you end that grind that you might take for granted, once you leave one grind, the next grind never stopped.
True.
You know, and that's where kudos to the wife, man. I'm like, I don't know how you balance all this stuff. I guess that's why, you know, if you play chess, you understand why the queen is the most powerful piece on the board. You know, they get to move this way, that way. They could function where the king, you know, as crazy as it is, the king can only move one spot at a time.
That's true. So, you know, my wife's going to bring that up to me later after she watches this.
No, that's all right. I mean, look,
you know.
It's just something we know as men, right? If you know and you play that game, chess is the game of life, all right? We, you know, women just have the ability to take on a little bit more. You know, men, we have the ability to do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
You can give us a task, just don't have us do too many multitasks.
I understand. So, I mean, you have a beautiful family. You're an engaged father. You're coaching youth sports. You're involved in nonprofits. And one of the things that you mentioned to me when we talked the other day is all of that revolves around the idea of never being afraid or ashamed to ask for help when you need it.
Absolutely.
And I think you also mentioned that sometimes you get so wrapped up in the career that some of those things just aren't at the top of mind. So how do you help these kids better themselves and make sure that they know when they need to ask for help?
Yeah, so my nonprofit It's called Pipeline, the number two to prosperity.
Yep.
And, you know, me, my wife, and a couple of my partners in New York, you know, we realized that there was a need, especially around the pandemic. Like, I was seeing so many things during the pandemic, and I think we all have seen. But the one thing I've seen that there was a need for was, you know, being on a grassroots level with these kids. Hmm. You know, for them to be basically going to school, socializing every day, to being now almost antisocial, where they're on a computer screen all day, and then they're just trying to figure out different creative ways, you know. I felt like they were the ones who needed the most attention, not, you know, disparaging any adults or anything like that. But I seen what it was doing to my own kids, right? Mm. And I seen a lot of my youth in New York getting in trouble.
So I was going to ask, pipeline to prosperity, right?
Yeah.
Is that a play on words of pipeline to prison? Because I've heard that phrase before.
Yes.
It is. Okay.
So you literally took... That's why we came up with Pipeline and Prosperity, because we looked at, you know, the numbers on kids that go through adversity, growing up in single parent households, you know, and the numbers are there. I mean, they're out there. They're more likely on a pipeline to prison.
Wow.
We said, well, why would we do that if we could step in, you know, around the fifth and sixth grade era, mm-hmm. whether you're in sports or life, we could be that funnel system to help you shape your situation.
Got it.
We don't believe in throwing. I mean, a wise man told me, you don't just throw people away.
That's right.
And if you're born, I mean, you can make a difference, right? And I've seen not only myself, but I've seen others, whether it was faith-based change or just changing an individual, just reinventing their identity, right? And so that's where it all came from. To be honest with you, the balance was just never giving up on a, you know, on a kid. And I was one of those kids where, you know, they say it take a village to raise a child. I grew up with not a lot of resources, mm-hmm. you know. And today there are a lot of resources, but 90% of the time, a lot of people just don't know where to get them or mm-hmm. know where to apply them. And I think that's where the nonprofit world could be really special in terms of, you know, grants and programming and partnerships.
Absolutely.
You know, where I feel like Pipeline to Prosperity could be great is in partnerships. Mm-hmm. We want partnerships with school districts. We understand the work a guidance counselor has to do, but we also understand that some of these kids are raising themselves at home.
Yeah.
So
and
we're
sometimes
better.
Sometimes they're brothers and sisters, too.
Yeah. We might not have the degree or doctorates and things like that to get into the school systems and work that 9 to 5, but the best teacher in life at this point is experience.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're just saying we would rather work with you than against you. You know, and I think that's a beautiful thing, because at the end of the day, I was one of those kids who grew up in Boys and Girls Club of America, mm-hmm. you know, where my mom know I was after school. She didn't have to worry about chasing me around, where now, you know, Boys and Girls Club of America, great program, but, you know, the overpopulation and things like that, like it's not as big as, you know, there needs to be other outlets for that now.
Mm, yeah.
You know, rather than just, you know, singles. It's just like Nike and Under Armour. They can coexist in this world, you know. So it's not about competition in the nonprofit world. It's actually about saving a life.
That's right. So, I mean, this idea of the community involvement and the nonprofit, was that a bridge that really helped you transform your life personally after everything that happened in 2014?
Yeah, so what it made me do was realize that, you know, like I said, I say everything without making excuses, but I think that if you ever want to do something special, mm-hmm. you have to go back to the roots on where you understand where the problems I identified where I felt like it started.
Okay.
You know, and that was going all the way back to childhood. So what did it do for me? It made me feel like I was one of those kids. Like, imagine I'm a kid growing up and the only thing I know in life is sports, right? And at 8, 9 years old, my dream is to make it in sports. But 11 and 12, I get in some kind of trouble. And I think sports is over. Where do you think that kid's going to go? He's going to go to the streets. Mm-hmm. That's what he's going to do. I mean, if sports don't work out, but at the end of the day, that, like, now take it further. That kid in 11 doesn't get at 11 years old doesn't get in trouble. He makes it, but now all he hears about is making it Division One. He doesn't go D1. Is your career over? No, but you might go to Division Two school full scholarship and get your education paid for. Mm-hmm. You know, so but the problem is they're not really thinking about what sports or life can bring to you. Like, you're supposed to use the sports as tool. Yeah. You're not supposed to throw everything into that one basket.
That's right.
You know, it's just a tool. You know, making it to the NFL, making it to the NBA, making it to playing any form of professional sports is just like you got a better chance of getting struck by lightning. You know, that's how small of it is of the world that plays professional sports. So what we're seeing is, I mean, just call it, there's talent, there's luck, there's being in the right place at the right time. Everything has to line up for you to make it to that next level.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't, I don't believe in backup plans now. That's where I believe in planning along the way.
Got it.
You know, because anytime you say backup plan,
that means
when was it ever going to be a priority?
That's true.
You know, everybody talks about plan A, plan B, all right? Like, be honest with you, I would compare everything to sports. Like, there's no such thing as a backup plan in sports. When we were down in, you know, when we played against the San Diego Chargers and it's 4th and 29, mm-hmm. there was only one play call.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's 4th and 29. It's Hail Mary in Madden. But Joe Flacco decides to throw the ball to me. Okay, there was no backup plan there. Yeah. I made that play 1,000 times in practice. You know, so it was plan A all along. But if you don't prepare for that, that's where the problems, I feel like every day has to be a, you know, situation of preparation.
Yep.
So that when these situations present themselves to you, not only are you ready for them, but you're prepared.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's what you're doing with the youth now.
Yeah, that's right. That's the fun. Out. That's the fun in it.
And you mentioned that you were able to identify some things in your childhood that caused you some problems later on. And I'm just curious, do you ever get emotional or feel it and know in your heart that that your fiance back then and now your wife was willing to make that journey with you?
Oh yeah, I mean, she's the real MVP.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've known each other since, I mean, childhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I mean, we actually went to rival, like, her town was my, like, I don't know out here what would be considered a rival town, but it'll be like, I guess, McDonough playing against Gilman or something like that. But, her town was Mount Vernon. I was New Rochelle. And, you know, that was the one thing, I'll be honest with you, like, I take full responsibility as a man, like, for everything that happened. Like, I never really, it just pains me sometimes now, even when I think about, like, her, like, she's the strongest person I know, but they wanted to label her a victim. Like, she's, like, you know, I just don't like the labeling things for her because, you know, she really sacrificed almost, you know, her life just, you know, and she got her own degree and things like that. But for her to help, you know, raise this family, you know, her sacrifice was a lot more than mine. I took the, you know, the bumps and bruises on the field, but just dealing with, you know, life itself, dealing with, there's no one that could tell me different. You got to be a strong woman to deal with a professional athlete.
Yeah, that's truth.
You know, and just calling it what it is, to be able to sacrifice and say, I have to deal with him probably only 50, not, I would say less than that, probably 45% of him.
Yep.
And that's all I'm going to get. Because you got to bargain. Like, these guys put more money into their bodies and, you know, things like that. And I'm saying you just got to be a strong woman. Your faith got to be right. I'm not saying that's a problem. I'm saying is you got to be a really strong woman to deal with a professional athlete.
It takes a special person.
Takes a special person.
Absolutely. So I think you moved back to Baltimore, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, I'm moving on a year now.
Moving on a year. Know, so what's on the horizon? So you're back here. Your daughter's about to start a new school.
Yeah. So, yeah, the horizon's great. You know, I've been working with the Pikesville Wildcats. but all youth football. Got you it. Know, so anybody who sees this, I understand sometimes we might have to play against each other, but you know the sportsmanship is there. You know, I teach our kids, you know, which is great. I'm not the head coach, but I got a, you know, just great role around the program. And it's fun because, you know, I think as you're – I'm a routine guy, mm-hmm. so during football season, I just need a little bit that itch, right? I don't want to play, but it is so great to go out there on Saturday.
Get in that routine.
And get into that routine, that pregame warm-up, to hear the music, and to push these kids hard all week for them to go out there for that one moment.
And see the result, right?
And see the result.
Yeah.
And then everything that comes with it, like the good, bad, and the ugly, like I'm like I just feel so blessed to be able to really pour into these kids. Like, you know, we got kids that if they had a bad day at school, you know, it's okay to tell them, like, yo, a bad day at school is going to end up a bad day on the field. So if you don't fix this, then we got to sit this week.
That's right. It's a domino effect.
I watched it last year, you know, where the head coach had to sit one of our players who was a key player in the game, and he had to watch from the sideline. And I had to tell him, like, I asked him, how did that make you feel? He said, I feel like I let my brothers down. Hmm. Well, I said, just now you understand that everything you do, you know, has a domino effect. And I'm looking at him telling him that message. But I was really echoing something that happened in my own life.
That's right.
So I'm like, if you the top guy, your role and responsibility becomes that much more. So if you do something, it not only affects you, it affects everyone around you. So me saying that to him was like an aha moment for me, and it was very therapeutic because I'm almost felt like a therapist, but I was really trying to teach him life. And it sunk in, and we never had an issue the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for it.
That's amazing. So I've been hearing a little bit. I know we're over time, but we're just going to have to go over time.
Oh, that's
but I hear a little bit in faith in some of the words that you're saying. Do you have a strong faith base?
Yes. You know, I grew up believing in God. My aunt was a pastor. My aunt that was a pastor just passed from cancer.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's unique that I can mention her now. And, you know, as far as the grieving part, right? And I think faith to her was everything. And, you know, right before she passed, her husband told us a story where if you have faith, you praise through the good and the bad.
That's right.
And she was battling cancer, and they said that, you know, during her treatments and everything, she was still praising God through all the pain and agony. Now, I'm saying take that situation for someone who's battling cancer, who knows, you know, the end is near, and you still can praise, then I got everything to be thankful for. Because uniquely, I would never go on the field on the football field without talking to my aunt. She would pray with me over the phone, like, every day. Like, I would not take the field on game day. I used to hear the church, her service in the background. She would not stop the service. They would be in praise and worship. And then she would whisper a prayer to me, and then I would go on the field.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think when you have that level of faith and you're grounded in that moment and in that way with God, anything bad happens, it's just a moment, and you know it passes, and there's something great on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I really believe in that. You know, anyone can do it. It just takes some time and effort.
Well, that's the thing. I think the thing that faith and forgiveness both start with F, right?
Yep.
I think in order to have great faith, you got to have a level of forgiveness that's deeper than yourself. So that's where my faith grew, because I had to forgive myself. The first thing I had to forgive was myself. And I realized that after forgiving myself, a difference of opinion is not a deal breaker. So a lot of things that might cross my palate, you know, about life and things like that, like they don't bother me anymore. At the end of the day, everybody's obligated to an opinion. I already forgave myself, so you were already forgiven before you even said anything. So, and that's kind of my approach, man. And I think that's what keeps me grounded. To be honest with you, you know, I try. I mean, we all have our days to not take anything personal. But truly, my faith is in forgiveness. And that's the only way you learn how to do that is through repetition. So, and some of the things do come, it's like, I mean, I forgave him already. Like, there's nothing much to,
that's right,
to go about it. And I think, you know, me not engaging really, I mean, I don't disagree with social media, but I'm not on it actively. Yeah.
I think there's more traps than good stuff in there.
Yeah, I'm not on it actively. So, I mean, I will be putting my nonprofit stuff on there. Mm-hmm. It will be ran by, you know, a team of people. But me actively, you know, I don't engage in, you know, the everyday of social media. Yeah.
Well, speaking of your nonprofit, and this will be the last question, I promise. If people want to support the nonprofit, is it pipelinetoprosperity.org or .com?
Yeah, it's pipelinetoprosperity.com, but website is being built.
Okay.
So we do have like a you know, a template page where you can go on there, put your email down for notifications and things about what's going on and
excellent,
things like that.
Any fundraisers coming up?
I will be doing soon. I'll probably get that back to you, but a fundraiser soon. I'll probably be doing something to help out the cost of youth football.
Okay.
And you know, that'll be coming up in the next month or so. I'll be calling John from Jimmy Seafood. We'll, yep, be putting it together. But, you know, sports is expensive, you know. But that's not the reason why I feel like a kid shouldn't play. You know, so I've even done it last year where you see parents, man, they're out there. But I would like to, you know, ease that for them, you know, especially when it comes to equipment, new cleats and stuff like that. Man, these kids, you know, it's not about spoiling them. Like I said, we have to give them the resources.
Yep.
And I'm okay with dangling a treasure out there for them to go get.
Yep.
You know, but I'm also understand that what could be given can be taken away. They need, absolutely, to understand that. I'm preaching my own message.
So for all you people watching on YouTube, I'll make sure that we put the link both to the nonprofit as well as the fundraiser in the comment section as soon as we get it. So don't forget to hit the like button, the share button, and subscribe. And Ray, I really appreciate you coming in. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope we can do this again.
Oh yeah, man, I'm open to it, especially as the football season goes. You could, you know, bring one of the kids on so they could tell you their experience.
I'd love it. I'd love to. Thank you, guys.
I appreciate it.